when the show starts, we'll be talking about this.
You're listening to Almost Famous with Jim Francis Meza, only on LA Talk Radio.
Actor and actress.
Are we on right now?
Yeah.
Name an actor or an actress? Oh, I don't know. William Shatner. I don't know.
Okay. Anyway. I think Jim France is a better name.
Jim France.
Name a form of transportation.
A time machine, so I can go back to the night before the OJ incident. Make sure I wasn't there.
It's a blessing and a curse, right? Things you could do in Las Vegas.
What about things you shouldn't do in Las Vegas? How about that?
I think it's fair to say that.
Are we just jump right in this, like the show's on? You know, are we on here?
Yeah, we actually are. We're on. We're playing It'll Come to You. This is a great game, a little deck of cards that my good friend Asia Jackson came up with. She thought this through and said, hey, man, you know, you ought to play this with your guest. And she had no idea that I would have such a colorful and awesome friend of mine that I consider a friend, you know?
If you sort of know the people, you can ask about things in your life. But if it's like if you're on a first date and you don't know them, that would be a cool game.
That would be a good game. Yeah. But this is definitely one to break the ice. So if you don't have it, pick it up on Amazon. It's called It'll Come to You. As I live and breathe, holy mother of God, do I have a wonderful person right across from me? I have driven this gentleman, guys. I've driven this gentleman plenty of times over the course of 15 years when I was a limo driver over at Diva. I have was my first podcast. You were my first guest, Juicy Diva's Confessions of the Limo Driver, named after the late Miss Elizabeth Taylor. This gentleman here has a book called Busted. I'm referring to a wonderful cat I've known for a long time. Guys, please help me welcome Mr. Thomas J. Riccio.
It's actually me clapping, so that's a little pompous, but you know what I mean? I come off as sort of pompous anyway. I have a limo driver.
Yeah.
But it was like you drove me. The Geraldo show hired you to drive me. You're not really my limo driver. Let people know that.
Yeah, right? We did, and under crazy circumstances, because that whole time it had just happened that Anna Nicole Smith had passed away, and you you had her diary because you know you're obviously you're a collectibles guy.
That was a crazy story there too.
Yeah,
you know, she had this show on TV. The Anna Nicole reality show where she just wobbled around drunk.
Right.
It was kind of a hit. And this guy, they canceled the show after a while. People got tired of her. So this guy who lived next to the house where they taped the show said, you know, a friend of mine in the neighborhood was dumping their garbage and found these diaries and some other stuff. Do you want them? And I said, you know, what do you want for him? She says, it's really kind of weird. I mean, she talks some raunchy stuff about, about how she made her boyfriends stick their tongue up her butt if she thought they were cheating and stuff. Yeah. And it was funny, you know what I mean? But I'm like, you know what? Anna Nicole, people are tired of her. I really don't want anything to do that. I'm going to pass for $1,000. So then, like a few months later, her son died. And it was like the Prince of England died.
Right.
It was all over the news. Anna Nicole's son died. And the poor guy, I'm not putting him down, but like, who was Anna Nicole's son? He had no personality. It was not really not. But it was all over the news.
Right.
Anna Nicole's son dies. And I'm like, hey, I guess she's a big deal.
Right.
Her son died.
Yeah.
And, you know, what do you want for the diaries? He goes, I want 10 grand. 10 grand? You wanted $1,000 a few months ago. Well, she's international news. Her son died. I don't get it, but, you know, let me look at the diaries again. We lost them. We don't know where they are. Yeah. So then a few months later, she dies.
Right.
And it's like the Queen of England died.
Yes.
It was all over it was 24/7 news. Adam Nicole, like the Queen of England just died.
Right.
I mean, everywhere, Adam Nicole. And they were asking me about these diaries. I had a couple of friends. So Dave, what do you want for the diaries?
Right.
$50,000.
Holy.
I go, wait a minute, you were going to the 1,000, then 10, I went, hey, you know, she died. You know, people want to know about her. Yeah, but they don't talk like they were always asking who's the baby's daddy. There was a million people saying it's the baby. She just had a baby. No one knew who the daddy was.
Yeah, yeah.
But these diaries talked about this billionaire husband that she had. She called him sugar daddy in the book.
Oil.
Yeah. It didn't mention who the baby's daddy was. Sure. It wasn't this guy. This guy had been dead for years or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it was still like really weird stuff. Mm-hmm.
He was hanging on a thread, and she was still by his side, and then the people were already fighting for.
Well,
his
the story
state, right?
was mm-hmm. that she was like a stripper somewhere trying to make some money, and this guy was in love with her and said, "I want to marry you," and she says, "No, I'm not going to marry you." Then every other stripper in the thing said, "I'll give you $1,000 if you hook me up with her. I'll marry him." Yeah. And she thought for a minute, "Hey, maybe I should marry him," and she married him. And, you know,
overnight,
everyone said that if she would have hung out with him, she would have gotten $1 billion. But she didn't. She married him and ran to Hollywood and screwed around and did drugs. Yeah. And, you know, she ended up dying. And you know, I mean, there was a big fight over the money. Sure. But she really wasn't with him much. So the son fought her. And I guess she won like $70 million. And he fought it in court. And said, "I'll give you $35 million." And she said, "No, I guess that wouldn't buy enough drugs or whatever. I don't know." What she said, "No." So they went back to court again.
Yeah.
And then she lost the second appeal. And you know what was funny?
Go ahead.
The guy who was the son of this billionaire said, "You know what? We'll probably both be dead by the time this thing is settled." He dies like a month later, and then she dies 6 months after that.
What?
So he was right. I mean, nobody got the money, you know.
It was like a fucking pipe dream. Like
but I went on every show,
and I
got sponsors. I had this show called Golden Palace, this sponsor called GoldenPalace.com, would pay me $5,000 a show.
You told me that on the way
and
home.
Then I had Clips for Sale where you can make a porno movie with your wife and you split it with Clips for Sale. And they couldn't get advertising anywhere, so they said, "If you mention Clips for Sale." So I went on this show.
And you started saying a bunch of, weren't you talking, just dropping a bunch of names, right, as you were there?
No, what happened was this guy, Harvey Levin, he had this thing TMZ called TMZ, and he wanted the diaries. So I said, "All right, put a link up there and tell everybody that it's on Clips for Sale." And it busted their internet. And they paid me $10,000 per every international show I went on. I went on Geraldo. I went on Larry King. I went on everything. And they couldn't pay me to be on there, but they mentioned my sponsor, including TMZ, mentioned the sponsor. And it was a big success for them, and I made a lot of money on it. And then one day, some college got shot up. I think it was Virginia Tech got shot up. I was scheduled to go on 3 shows that day, and they're like, "Oh, we're going to postpone you for a minute." And the story was dead.
Oh,
Anna Nicole was on the news nonstop for, I want to say, 6 weeks until some college got shot. They canceled me, and that was the end of it. But then a couple months later, the OJ thing happened, and then they just started calling me again.
Which, you know what, guys? And it's fair to note and fair to say that you have also escaped jail. Like, Chapo wasn't the only guy that escaped when you were a teenager. Why don't you tell that story and how you met your first wife?
My only wife.
Your only wife.
My first wife. Well, I'm still dear friends with her. Okay, she's wonderful,
awesome.
Wonderful.
Yeah,
lady.
You're
known her for 40 cool. years.
Yeah.
I was a punk kid running around New York with my friends, and we used to do scams on the boardwalk and this and that. Anyway. I was into baseball cards when it wasn't cool in the 80s. Like, some of my friends were like, "You still collect baseball cards, you nerd, blah, blah, blah." But it was how I bought my first car and stuff like that. And there was like one show a year in New York City. Mm-hmm. And I went with a friend of mine. I won't say who he was, but I went with a friend of mine. I was supposed to get like $1,000 wholesale for these cards. I had an ad in a newspaper, and this lady came over with a, for $20, I bought a big refrigerator box full of cards. And this guy took all the star cards, the Mickey Mantles, everything else, and he gave me like $500, but I needed the money. And I told my friend I didn't get enough, but it was the end of the show, and this guy sort of like, you know, but I listen, like I told my friend, I bought him cheap too. I don't blame him for wanting to buy him cheap, but if I had gotten there earlier, I would have gotten a lot more. But anyway, he was like, oh man, you know, you got screwed, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, so this guy walks out with his Hitachi case. When I see him, I said, that's the guy I sold the cards from. They're right there in that case. And he sits at the bar and leaves the case there. My friend walks out with the case. Anyway, we're on the way home. It's on CBS News Radio 88. Sneak thieves make off with over $500,000 worth of coins. We're on the way home. We're like, I'm shitting my pants. And my friend's like, whoa, $500,000 in that fucking case for your car. We broke the thing open. It was all this gold, all this shit.
Oh, my God.
So we go around the country. We go out to L.A. We buy a van. And we're selling at all the coin shows and all the conventions and everything else. And, you know, we rent the house on the beach and we have friends and everything else. Anyway, long story short, my brother got involved. He found out that was, and he wanted to sell some of them. So he sells like $15,000 worth. He's some punk kid himself, and just out of college, and he goes to the bank with the wrapper on it, with the account number of the coin shop, and the FBI just did a check. Where did this kid get $15,000? And they go to the coin shop, and they said, I want a lawyer, and they told him, you know, what he bought, and they traced the coins back that they were stolen at the show. And long story short, my oldest brother and my father and everything, like, listen, you were the one that were there, blah, blah, blah. So I ended up pleading guilty. So I ended up going to jail. And I was supposed to get, like, it was the first time me being in trouble. I was supposed to get Youthful Offender Act with the federal prison, since we sold them across state lines all over the country. But when I went to my hearing for that, they were like, where are the rest of the coins? I go, I don't have any more. You go, well, you got caught, you know, selling them at a show after you told the judge you didn't have any more. We don't believe you. So they said, continue the expiration. Yeah. And I remember I played poker that day and I won a bunch of postage stamps. And I was so pissed that I wasn't getting out of prison.
Right.
It was a foggy day. It was like a few days after Christmas. And it was warm. It was like 60 degrees. And it was like the snow on the ground was melting and everything. It was really foggy. And I went like I was going to work. But when the door shut, I climbed up this chain link fence that was on this garage door, like opening for the building. And I got up on the building, and I had seen from the other side that there was a fence there, and then there was woods. But I didn't know that when I got up on the building, there was another part of the building that was higher. I had to pull myself up, and it was sloped down 30 feet high. Oh. And I'm thinking, ah, shit, this might be a mistake. You know what I mean? But then I'm like, man, I want out of here. So I hung off the thing. And then again, I'm thinking, this is a mistake. I'm pulling myself back up, and I slip, and I fall into an embankment. And one of those trucks go by, the shooter trucks that go around the prison.
Just happened to be there.
And I'm like, fuck, but it was foggy. He didn't see me. Right. I'm like, man, I stay down in the snow, and I wait like 10 minutes. I see the truck going. So I say, fuck, I have about 10 minutes now.
Get away.
So as soon as he leaves, I fucking run towards the fence. And I climb up the fence, and there's razor wire on, like barbed wire on the fence. But I had a coat on. They have this federal, like, army thing they give you. But on weekends, you can wear a sweatsuit. I had a sweatsuit underneath it. But I had gloves, too, you know. So I jump under there. My gloves get caught in the barbed wire. And it actually, I still have a scar here. It ripped my finger on part of the barbed wire. And there they are in the thing. And I run through the woods. I'm running and I'm running and I'm running and I'm running. And I'm, you know, I'm fucking like, what was it, like 20 years old back then or something? You know, I ran for like 2 miles. I hear the cars going by. And finally, I stop and I realize I'm running alongside a highway. So I cut through the woods and there was a road on the other side. And I go down the road into the neighborhood. And I took off all my army stuff. Now I have my sweatsuit on. And I saw a guy, like, shoveling out his driveway, and I asked where a post office was, because I have, like, I don't know, $50 worth of stamps on me. I want to sell at the post office.
Right.
So the guy's like, you know, He's like, you know, you go down a couple blocks, you take a left at the tree stump. I don't know what the fuck he's saying, right? Yeah. And I'm like, you know, he's like, I'm like, wait, you turn left, you turn right, you go a mile there. He goes, you know, help me shovel out my driveway. The snow is out. He's like, I'll give you a ride there.
Oh,
so I'm like, yeah. He comes out with hot cocoa. I'm shoveling out his driveway real quick. And he takes me to the post office. Wow. And I stand in line. And
did
I
have
go,
any
I,
marshmallows to go with that?
Yeah, I mean, it was nice. He gave me a ride right to the post office. I never would have been able to find. I probably would have got caught walking there.
Fucking
so nice. I go to the post office. And the guy at the counter, I have like $48 worth of stamps. I say, he goes, we don't take refunds on stamps. We don't buy them back. And all of a sudden, this voice behind me goes, what happened? Was your Christmas card list bigger in your mind than reality? And I go, yeah, that's it. And he goes, well, what do you want for them? Give me a better deal. He goes, I'll give you $40 for them. So he gives me $40. I'm able to get a train out of Danbury Prison, Connecticut. I go to New York. I call my buddy up who had my car. I sold him my car. I get a ticket, a plane ticket to L.A.
Beautiful.
Right? As soon as I get there, I'm on Hollywood Boulevard. I'm crossing the street. Cop asked me for. I had fake ID. I got in New York with my friend when I met him.
Show him your ID. Show him your ID.
This is my new ID, but I didn't
check out this ID. It's fucking, it's legendary.
Hey, it works sometimes.
It's legendary.
That's my ID right there. I am McLovin. And I like that movie. But I had a fake ID, and the cop gives me a jaywalking ticket for crossing Hollywood Boulevard right at the wrong spot. I'm like, what the hell? I rip it up, I throw it away.
Right, that's what I did too.
Anyway,
back when
I ended up meeting my girlfriend at a Burger King. I met my girlfriend. Who ended up, I met her, some beautiful blonde in the back of a Volkswagen convertible. And I saw her out there, and some guys were hitting on her. And I kept telling them, get her number. And I got the number when they asked for the number. And I called her, and she didn't know who I was because the other guys were talking to her. And I called her. I invited her. She said, I was looking for her. There was a girl named Cyndi Lauper that was popular at the time.
Oh, yeah.
I go, yeah, I can get you Cyndi Lauper. You know, but I ended up bringing her to a U2 concert. And we hit it off. And we saw each other almost every day. And basically, after about 5-6 months, I was working at Wes's Hall of Fame in Hollywood. It was a baseball card shop.
Yeah.
And Wes was a cool guy, and he ended up testifying for me when I got caught. But anyway, what happened was I was trying to get my wife home before 12 o'clock because her father was really strict. Mm-hmm. And I was passing on the right, mm-hmm. passing cars to make a turn, and a cop stops me. And I got a drop.
This wasn't the Cinderella story, right, at 12 o'clock?
Well, basically, her father was really hard on her. Yeah. So I tried to get her home on time. And the cop, I got a California driver's license from that fake ID. And the cop says, I have a warrant for my arrest for jaywalking. It was that jaywalking ticket when I first got to town. I had like $500 in my pocket in those days. You know, I would carry cash and shit. Yeah. I said, I'll be paid it off. It was a $180 warrant.
Yeah.
They said, you have to go down to the station.
Right.
So they took me down to the station. They fingerprinted me. They found out I was out on escape.
Oh, my God.
Federal escape. But my girlfriend was like, she was down for waiting for me and everything else. And you know, we went to court, and the judge was like, well, we can sentence him right now. It's a 5-year minimum term for escape.
Uh-huh.
And I had a young attorney say, well, we just want to put an innocent plea. And the judge was pissed off. Like, wait a minute. He's supposed to be in Danbury, Connecticut. He's out here at Terminal Island. How is he not guilty? And my lawyer was like, well, we don't know. He could have been kidnapped by aliens, brought here. And the judge's like, oh, you know, you're going to do that? And I'm like, wait, this guy's going to throw the book. But what happened was, like, Wes wrote a letter for me. My girlfriend wrote a letter for me. Everyone wrote a letter. And the judge was really cool. The judge gave me 5 years, which he had to give me, but he suspended. He suspended 4.5 years and gave me 6 months in a halfway house to run concurrent at the end. So basically, I escaped from prison. Yeah. I was out for 6 months. And I got 6 months in a halfway house at the end of my sentence.
Wow.
I really didn't get any more time. Anyway, I met my wife.
You skated, dude, bro. Like,
yeah, it was just this. I got out of prison. I had to start.
Best case scenario.
But I couldn't wait to get out of prison. I ended up dealing in baseball cards. Baseball cards were hot.
Yeah.
And, you know, I ended up doing pretty good. I ended up winning the lottery.
Yeah. This guy's won the lotto. Third person I met.
And I married my wife. We ended up having the Playmate of the Year and
daughter.
And the lead singer from the No Doubt band.
Yeah.
From the New Doubt, I mean. But yeah, we're, you know.
Wasn't your daughter like Playmate of the Year? Wasn't she like.
Claire Sinclair.
Yeah, she was married to. Or she hooked up with Hugh Hefner's son.
Oh, that's a whole nother story. Hugh Hefner's son, Marston Hefner. Yeah. The guy came to my house, never wanted to go out to dinner with us. We have to bring him back dinner. He put cigarettes out on my rug in my house.
Really?
He was such a douchebag. I was so happy when I found out that she was dating Hugh Hefner's son, because I'm a fan of Hugh Hefner.
Yeah.
He seems like a really nice civil rights guy and really, really good guy. But when I met the son had a $5,000 per month debit card that the father would give him.
What?
He always
that was his allowance.
That was his allowance, $5,000.
Oh, shit.
So but he always lost it. Right. And he would always come to me to borrow $100 to take my daughter out to dinner.
Ooh.
Never paid me back. And he was just a douche. He would go with my daughters and their friends to Kern Valley, these river raft things. And they would go down these rivers like light and fast, like 5 miles, and then they'd have to walk up the mountain and do it again. And one guy would always have to go up the mountain, get the car, and bring them up, and then they would go down again. They all took turns doing it, even the girls and the guys. He goes, "Do you know who I am? I'm Hugh Hefner's fucking son. I ain't nobody's bitch. I ain't going up there." Yeah, and then he would pay somebody $100 to go up the mountain to do it. He was just such a douche. Anyway, long story short, he ended up hitting my daughter. Wow. And, it was all right, though.
Oh, my God.
My daughter got like $300,000 for it, so that's
all. Oh, nice.
And she got out of court. She didn't want to do anything with Hugh Hefner because Hugh Hefner was nice to her, so she settled out of court. But the headlines were everywhere. Hefner beats up Playmate of the Year, and Hugh Hefner was pissed. He has the same. They think I beat up the Playmate of the Year. It's my fucking son. Beat up Playmate. So I'm like, don't worry. We don't want to go to court. We just went out of the Playboy contract because my daughter got offered her own show in Vegas. And Hugh Hefner wanted her to be the spokesperson of Playboy.
Right.
Because my daughter was a very outgoing. She liked to talk a lot and everything else. She's a very, very, very outgoing person. And they loved her. You know, she's a lot like me, but she's beautiful and I'm ugly. She was like the spokesperson. They wanted to keep her, but they wouldn't let her do the show. So she got out of the contract, and she ended up headlining a show called Pinup for 5 years. She was only supposed to be six That's months. Right. She did it for 5 years.
I remember that. I thought Dave Navarro had something to do with that or something. I saw something where Dave Navarro was there.
I know there was a guy named Frankie Marino that had like a Frank Sinatra type. He was a young guy that sung like Frank Sinatra, and he got clear of the show there. Okay. He wanted to do a Pinup type show.
Very cool.
This guy was like married and hitting on my daughter and stuff like that. I'm like, don't be afraid.
So you make the money. How do you win the lotto? Did you win the lottery, like fair and square?
You know what? I'll tell you what happened.
Okay, tell me.
I got out of prison,
okay,
and I sold my baseball card collection to my brother. So my brother goes, "Hey, why don't you sell them for me at retail? Do the shows." Mm-hmm. So I said, "All right." And I'm at the shows and I'm doing really good. And the cards, I sold them for like $5,000, were worth like $20,000. Not only that, I was getting retail and I was doing trades. And in those days, they had fax machines. At the end of every show, I had a fax on the list, and he'd criticize me. So there was this guy named Billy Ripken. He was Cal Ripken's brother. And they had a card called the Fuckface Ripken card. Somebody as a joke put Fuckface on his back, and there he is posing. And they actually made the card before they blotted it out or whatever. They painted over it, but a few of them got out. Little kids would come up to me 10 years old. "You got the Fuckface Ripken card?" Anyway, that card was worth like $150 a card.
Shit.
So this guy comes up to me.
This is the 80s or
1989. Sorry.
Yeah, it's a lot of money.
So this guy comes up to me and says, "I want your Whitey Ford card. I have some cards for trade." So I see two Fuckface Ripkens in his collection. I go, "I'll take these. Will you do one?" I go, "No, I got to get two. These aren't mine." I told him the truth. I got to get two. I got to make a few bucks if I'm doing a trade. So the guy gives me the two. And here, it was a Whitey Ford card worth about $80. And I ended up selling the two Fuckface Ripkens for $300.
Wow.
But my brother sees on the facts that I traded his Whitey Ford for two Fuckface cards, which he didn't know about. He goes, are you fucking kidding me? you fuckface. You traded Whitey Ford for fuckface, you fuckface. And he started yelling at me. And I go, you know what, Paul? Look down the list. I got $300 for a card you wanted $75, $80 for. And you know what? I'm done with this.
Right.
And I shipped him back his cards. But now, you know, I had no inventory to sell.
Yeah.
Right? And this guy just comes out of the blue that day and says, I have a shop at the Beverly Center that sells candy and posters. And everyone asked me for baseball cards. Would you like to be there? I'll give you a space there, a couple showcases for $500. I go, hell yeah. The problem is I have no cards anymore. I gave my brother the cards. And so what happens is this guy who I was right next to all the time, he's about my age, named Robbie. I says, you live in Hollywood. I got a spot at the Beverly Center. I signed a deal with the guy, $500. He goes, oh, my God, it's a really happening place next to the movie theater. We can make a fortune there. And I go, yeah, but I need your cards. He goes, what happened to all your cards? I gave them back to my brother. He goes, well, I don't know. You got to put some cards in, too, if you want to be partners with me. I said, well, just give me a couple months. I'll get it. I trust you. Trust me. He goes, I don't know. Meet me at the San Bernardino. We'll talk about it. So I go to the San Bernardino show, and this guy walking around with a shoebox of cards, I notice he's showing them to people. And he's like, he wants to sell them all. And he has like a Tom Seaver rookie, a Ryan rookie. He has some really cool shit in there. And I go, is this all you got? He goes, actually, I'm going to college. I'm leaving on Monday. But I have a storage locker full of shit down the street.
Oh, wow.
And he was trying to ask for like a couple $1,000s for the box.
Yeah.
Anyway, I offered him like, oh, there. He has all the hot new stuff. The Jose Canseco's at the time, and the Daryl Strawberry, and he has them all in books and sets and everything, all the good shit. And then he has that box, probably worth about $5,000 that he wanted a couple grand for. And I said, I'll give you $1,500 for everything. He goes, no. He goes, if I can't get $2,000, I'll just keep my really. I go, okay, I'll give you $2,000. I don't have $2,000. So I go back to the show, and I pile up a bunch of the commons, like 5,000 count commons on a dolly that I borrowed from a guy that I knew. And people were coming around. What do you got, Thomas? I was always buying and selling shit. Right. I go, I got all these cards, 5,000 guys. They opened up one of them, and it was a Cecil Fielder rookie. He's like 30 of them. He was hot at the time. He was hitting like 30 home runs. And there was a couple things in there. He's supposed to be commons. So some guy offers to give me, I asked for $2,500. He offers to give me $2,000, which is exactly the amount I owed this guy. He's sitting at my partner's table. So I end up getting the $2,000, giving it to him. And my partner goes to me, he goes, what did you do? He goes, I was thinking about it. Here's what I'm going to do. I'll give you $1,000 for the location, but I can't be partners with you without anything. So he comes out to my car. It's loaded with shit. He goes, what did you do? Rob a card shop? Like, no, I just made this deal. That thing I just paid for? I sold part of it. I probably had $20,000 worth of shit that I got for practically nothing. We're just flipping that deal. So we became partners. Problem was, I had a pregnant wife at home.
Right.
And I was there all the time working in, I had to drive to Beverly Center. I lived in Lakewood at the time. And this guy was always fucking around at night, too late. The next morning, he didn't want to wake up because he was out screwing around. Whatever he was doing, he would go to Chicago. His father had a baseball card shop there. He'd go there. So he was supposed to come back from Chicago and work with me, but he didn't work. He didn't work with me. He wanted me to work there and give him half the money. So we were having arguments in the thing, and the guy that owned the place was, you know, he was kind of like in demand. And even though I was a lot younger, he was the trendy Robbie with the long hair and dressed like a 1980s video star. Where I dressed like Fred Flintstone.
They said,
I dressed with t-shirts and shorts. And so,
still wear shorts.
Yeah, still wear them. And so the guy goes, you know, Robbie's more the fit for the Beverly Center than you. So he was forcing me to sell out. So I go, Robbie, if you want me to sell out, I want $10,000 cash,
there you go.
And I want all the cards that are in the case, not just mine, yours too. He goes, oh, that's too much, blah, blah, blah. I go, dude, I probably gave you more than that the last few months of me working. You're going to give me that back. Or we don't have to do that. He goes, I go, yeah, you do. The phone's in my name. I'll go to court. You can't just evict me like that because he's in love with you or some shit. You know, because you're hotter than me. You can't. It was my place. I found this place. So finally, he ended up settling with me. And my wife was crying. My wife was a really nice lady.
I got to meet her.
But she was like yelling at him. You robbed my husband out of the shop. This was his shop. And you didn't even work here. And blah. I said, calm down. I got a deal. The owner wants him to have it. I'll be all right. So I picked up his stuff. And on the way home, I bought a bunch of scratchers. And my wife's like, are you crazy? We got a baby coming. You got to work. I said, I'm going to do a show tomorrow, but I just feel like God ain't going to forsake me.
Sure, yeah.
I think God's going to reward me.
That gut feeling.
So I lost like $50 in scratchers, and she thought I'm nuts. So the next morning, I waked up to do the show.
Yeah.
And I had his cards and my cards and shit. I stop at 7-Eleven. I buy a quick pick, five quick picks, and some hot cocoa. You know, I like my hot cocoa.
Sure,
And I go to the show. I had the best show ever. This one guy sold me a stack of 100 Ken Griffey Jr. rookies for like $5 a piece. I paid it $500. I made like $4,000 or $5,000. I come home and my pockets were just loaded with money. I made like around over $10,000, which was good money for me in those days. Loaded, and I throw all my money on the thing, and there's a lottery ticket. Never in my life, in those days, they used to have these like 1-900 numbers. It cost 50 cents to call.
Okay.
I call this 1-900 number to see about the lottery. So I'm just having such a good day.
Did you call collect?
No, it cost 50 cents to check it out. 50 cents, 1-900, you call. So I write the numbers down, and I'm looking. The first number is the bonus number, which means nothing unless you get the other five.
Right.
So the next number, whatever it was, like 7.
Wow.
I got it. Next number was like a 14, got that. The next number was like a 19, whatever it was. I got that. But now I only won $3, $5. I got three numbers plus the bonus. The next number I get two. It's fourth number. So I'm not going to win like $100. But if I get the fifth number, I figure I win some big bucks. So it was like the fifth number was 47. I squeeze it and I see a 4. And I said, baby, come over here. If this is a 7, we won big.
Yeah.
So I squeeze it. And she goes, oh, you're kidding me. You're a kid. I go, is it a 7? She says, yeah, you're kidding me. I said, no. And I called up the number again.
Yeah.
So I'm, you know, the person at the 7-Eleven tells me, you know, that's a nice hit. You're probably like $100,000. Yeah. I'm calling my mom. I want like $100,000.
Right.
It's good money. You know, I can put a down payment on my house. My wife's pregnant and everything else. So I can't sleep. 6 o'clock in the morning is when they give the results. I go to the 7-Eleven and the manager's over there.
And, is this in Lakewood?
It's in Lakewood.
Okay,
yeah, so it's in Lakewood, border of Norwalk.
Yeah.
So I go in there, 6 o'clock in the freaking morning, they put out a printout of what I want. So don't tell me, I want to go in with my wife, figure out what I want. Since I'm hearing it'll be around hearing it'll be about $100,000. So yeah. I used to like to sweat things. I put my like my card over it and I'm sweating it and the numbers are 7. 7-5.
Oh,
and I'm thinking, all right, 75,000. 75,000, that's good. Still good. I'm happy as shit.
So cool,
75,000 dollars. So the guy's in the window, the manager, he's putting his thumbs up like this, and he comes in, he's high fiving me. That's a nice hit.
Yeah,
I go, yeah, 75,000. He goes, son, you didn't win 75,000. You won 755,000. And I'm looking at the numbers,
dude.
And I'm going 755. This is back in the 80s.
Beyond elated.
And I'm like, 1989, July of 89.
Dude.
So I'm like, I run out to tell my wife, and I thought, baby, it's not 75,000. It's 700. No one won the big prize of 1.5 million.
I'm living vicariously through you right now.
Nobody won the 1.5 million, but two people won the second prize with the bonus and split it, me and another guy.
Yeah.
So we won 750,000 apiece. So the guy goes, well, in Whittier is the lottery place.
Yeah.
You can go there before 5 o'clock, whatever you want to do. I still had my shit set up at the show.
Right.
But I take my wife to the lottery office that the guy at the 7-Eleven gives me. So if anything over 500, you got to go to the lottery office.
Wow.
So I go there and I ring the thing. And who are you? Show your ID. Come in. I go, I won the lottery. Come on in. So I show him the ticket. I show him my ID. So these lottery agents and police officers and stuff come up to me and goes, Thomas Riccio, we know who you are. I go, okay. Why didn't you tell us you were on parole? I go, what?
Oh, shit.
I go, what does that have to do with anything?
He goes,
who did you get this lottery ticket from?
Oh,
I go,
dude.
I didn't win. I didn't get this lot. I got it myself. Yeah, what time of day did you buy it?
Oh,
did you buy anything else with it? They're asking me all these questions.
Right,
they separate
right.
my wife. Did he tell you where you got the lottery? They're yelling at me and everything else. You know, you're a felon, and all of a sudden you win the lottery like right away, like you just got out of prison. You won the lottery. And I'm like, oh, fuck, they're going to throw me in prison over this.
Yeah.
So I tell them, okay, I got this yesterday, early in the morning.
Yeah.
I even know the guy I bought it from. His name was Felipe, and he remembers me. And I bought a hot cocoa with it, and I did it. Wow. They had me in the room, and they separated me from my. Then they brought my wife back in. My wife said, "I don't know what's going on." My wife's getting all upset. Then all of a sudden they come out and they shake my hand. Congratulations, we confirmed everything. Congratulations on being our 720th lottery winner. Oh blah, God, blah blah blah. And so
it's the greatest moment, right?
So I go back to the show.
I go to
Robbie, and Robbie still owes me $5,000.
Right.
So I go to Robbie, you know what? Forget about the $5,000, just give me some cards. And I'm picking out some cards that were hot at the time. He's like asking me super retail. And I'm like, yeah, you know what, dude? I'm good. I'm going to buy that for the $5,000. I'm going to take that at retail. I'm going to take that. He goes, why are you doing this? What, did you win the lottery?
Yeah.
I go, as a matter of fact, I did. and so.
Not bad for a fuckface.
yeah. So I go to the bank.
Okay.
I go to the bank when I get my check. I get it a couple weeks later.
Uh-huh.
I didn't get it right away. They sent it to
me,
a check.
Right.
So I go to the bank. It's Bank of America. And they had this thing called an alpha account.
Okay.
Where you can borrow up to $200 on an alpha account. It's the first ever debit cards that came out right at that time. And you can go overdraw $200. So at the time, every month, I paid my rent. I probably had $7 in the bank, right?
Right.
At that time, for a couple of months, I left the $7 because I hardly had any money. I was buying baseball cards, flipping my money, whatever I was doing, right?
Awesome,
so what I don't know is the $7 I had in the account went towards a fee of $10.
Okay.
Some bank fee with the alpha account. It's like $10 a month or whatever. So now I'm in debt for $3 to the bank.
Oh, shit.
Right? Yeah. And it was a few months. So after 2 or 3 months, I'm not paying the $3.
Uh-huh.
They whammied my credit, said that I was in debt to them for money that they charged me, right?
Yeah.
And said that they're closing my account. So I'm like, boy, that's really fucked up that you would do that.
Yeah.
You took money out of my account. You're saying that really sucks. I have this lottery check I'm trying to put in.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, wait a minute. They go and get the manager. This is a mistake. We're fixing your account. We're giving you a financial advisor.
Yeah.
We're going to, and you know, I was like, I don't hold a grudge. I'm like, all right, hook me up. This financial advisor goes, you know, there's this new place called Cabo San Lucas. It's in Mexico. It's all foreigners. I go, like, what, Mexicans? No, it's foreigners. They're buying
They're all American.
They're buying shit over there. It's going to be a really hot place. They have condos there for like $29,000. You should buy a few. So I go down to Cabo San Lucas, and I have a new baby and everything. And my wife didn't like it. She thought the sun was too short in the sky. It was on top of her, whatever. Yeah. But it was really nice. And Van Halen's building a condo, no, a club next to these condos.
There's the Cabo Wabble?
Yes.
Yeah, the Cabo Wabble.
Yeah. And there's a guy.
Sammy Hagar.
So there's like cinder blocks, and there's like one unit that's built.
Okay.
They're like, how many you want?
Yeah.
The upstairs ones are 34,000, the downstairs are 29,000. The ones with the view are 34,000. I'm like, fuck. $29,000, and you get the furniture too, and everything,
and the maid and the gardener.
Well, they rent them out for you, and the thing is, the rent was going up because a lot of people were coming from all over the world because they were really building that place up. So, I buy the condo, and I'm like, "You want to buy like 10 of them? Because that sounds cheap." Because no. So what happens is a few months later, the lady that sold it says, "You want to sell your condo?" And I go, "I don't know. It's ready to open." Like they says, "Well, we'll give you $75,000 for it," which is more than double what I paid for it. I go, yeah, we'll bring it in a bag to the airport. You don't even have to go, just sign some papers and it's done.
Yeah.
So I'm like, my wife's like, you know what? I don't like going down there anyway. Just sell it. And I wanted to buy more, but she wanted to. So I sell it. I get my center. Like 2 years later, it's worth $650,000.
Oh my God.
But I did really good in the baseball card business until it crashed.
Yeah.
Then I got in trouble buying another stolen collection, and then I ended up losing everything, and my wife left me, and I went back to I bought a collection that was stolen. This time I didn't know it was stolen. But because I had a record, I was the one guy they put in prison, and I lost everything. But I came back out, and now I'm doing better than ever again.
Yeah,
so I'm good.
Because you know, you have lots of memorabilia, and you know, your house is like a fucking museum, dude. It's fantastic.
I love what I do. I feel really blessed. People come to my house, and they buy $20,000-$30,000 worth of stuff off my wall, and then you know they come back a few months later. I have all new stuff.
Right.
I mean, I have like trailers full of framed stuff, but what people don't know is like one book can make up a whole room of framed stuff. And I have a lot. So I get excited when I find pieces. Like when I find one of them, like I had Elvis Presley's contract to buy Graceland.
Right, right.
You know? Yeah. I had Thomas Edison's patent for the light bulb. My company
is... What about something with the Beatles? What you have the last time I was there?
Oh, I have the Beatles call sheet. Uh-huh. The call sheet for a CBS show called The Ed Sullivan Show. That they were on.
1965.
Signed by the Beatles and Ed Sullivan and their girlfriends and everything. And it's the call sheet from the thing. It showed like everybody what time they were coming on and stuff. And that's a cool piece. I have Jim Morrison's.
Shut up. From the Doors?
Jim Morrison's Beale Bond.
Uh-huh.
From when he went on stage and whipped out his cock in front of everybody. They charged him with indecent exposure. So
this is the 60s, dude.
He pays $5,000 to bail out. He doesn't show up for court. Yeah. They find him guilty. They say, you got to spend a year in jail. Yeah. He goes to Florida.
Uh-huh.
Not Florida. He goes to France.
Yeah.
He goes to France, and he gets stressed out. And he overdoses of drugs and everything. And I have that actual bail bond with his mugshot and everything.
Hey, let's talk about the obvious, the horror, you know, like let's definitely address the elephant in the room. We're talking about Busted.
You calling me an elephant? I know I'm a little overweight, but come on.
Listen, you're a rhino.
Are you the elephant? Me and you are the only ones in the room, so.
Let's talk about the juxtaposition picture here with Mr. O.J. Simpson, the Jews.
I thought you were talking about this Kirtland wood.
It's not water, by the way. You haven't had a drink since.
Got Costco water. Kirkland. What is Kirkland? Everything's Kirkland at Costco.
That's Costco. Yeah, Costco. They own the, you know.
What the hell? What do they have? A factory that just makes everything under Kirkland, the sun?
Everything. Socks, panties, fucking, you know, thongs.
Water, food. You know, Kirtland bread. I mean, what the hell? They have Kirtland cows.
This Kirtland owns the whole Kirtland. The whole.
I don't know, man. Sounds fishy.
Yeah, I know. Right?
Sounds like a monopoly.
We gotta get to the bottom of that. Yeah. So, let's not avoid the topic. Let's talk about. I want to talk a little more about. Everyone knows about the heist that happened in Vegas, and how they said the way they have it. It's like the mastermind. Thomas Riccio set the whole thing up and then bugged the room to try to make money out of it. What really happened in Vegas? Take us through. We have about 12 minutes so we could talk about that. Then we could talk about Marsha Clark at another time. But let's
whatever you
want to
talk about. I don't care. We talk.
I want to talk.
We could talk more about my memorabilia. We don't need to talk.
I like to talk about memorabilia because enough people have seen.
No, you know, it's funny. The guy that bought the pages of the Anna Nicole.
The diary.
Michael Viner owned Phoenix Books. He called me after this robbery happened. He's like, you know, I love talking to you. Blah, blah, blah. You know, we did a book with Faye Resnick. It was our bestseller.
Okay.
Now you're involved in this OJ thing. I need you to write a book for me.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, man, I'm not a writer, you know? And he goes, listen, you got a million stories. I want you to write this book. And we got this lady. She there's this obnoxious guy named Gene Simmons from a band called Kiss. It was a bestseller. He never wrote a word of it. Larry King, you don't have to do shit. You just tell her the story. She'll write the book. Oh, that sounds like fucking the shit.
Yeah, sure.
You're gonna give me $1 million? No, I'm not gonna give you a million.
It's a no-brainer. Dude.
We'll give you 10,000. I go 10,000. No, fuck no. I don't want to do. I don't want. Yeah, they ended up giving me $50,000.
There you go.
But so I'm like, this is cool. I'll talk to somebody for $50,000.
How much did TMZ give you for that soundbite? The whole thing that went out the palms and then...
That's another story. I'm telling you about the book right now. But
okay. I know you want to sell your book. You're selling
your
book.
No, I'm not. I don't want to sell my book.
No, you're going to get a new book, right?
The book bombed.
It's going to reissue.
People love my book, but no one wanted to read it. They called me a convict and they didn't want to read it. Every show I went on, you're a scumbag, blah, blah, blah. People don't like it.
There's no such thing as bad publicity, Tom.
Yes, there is. When it comes to OJ, there's bad publicity. So anyway,
Chloe is his daughter, by the way.
Is my daughter? Chloe's my daughter?
It's O.J. Simpson's daughter.
Oh, I don't know nothing about that. I wasn't there when that happened. But I was there when the robbery happened. But anyway, so they offered me the money to write the book. And then, you know, I do the story. And it's interesting how they want to write the story.
Right.
When you're doing a life story, they ask you for headlines.
Right.
Not the story, just the headlines of your life. You know, my mom didn't get along with my grandma. That's the headline. Yeah. And you tell the story later.
Okay.
You know, the first day of school, I went to the principal's office. Just the headline. You know, the first time I got busted. The first time I met OJ. Just the headline. I escaped from prison. All right. So then they interview you about the things.
Okay.
So one of them was about the luckiest house in the world, this house that OJ owned before Graceland, that everyone that ever owned it became a millionaire. That some guy bought it when it was first done, and he had hardly any money, but he ended up striking oil when he was there. And then the next guy that bought it was Elvis, and he'd come from like a shack on a mountain somewhere, and he bought this beautiful house in Memphis on Audubon Drive, and he had his first number one hit there, and he had his first number one movie there, but now fans were knocking on his window and he needed a gated thing. So he became a millionaire while he lived there. It was lucky. So then he sells it to the real estate agent for Graceland. He trades it and gets one. And the real estate agent makes millions of dollars in real estate over the next couple of years. She can be able to, and then she sells it to some guy's family who barely can afford the house. But he ends up doing convenience stores and becomes a gazillionaire. Then he sells it in the 80s to some guy and a woman who want to do tours there. Okay. And that's when this fucking crashed. They paid $180,000 for it. It's worth $210,000, but they owe $250,000. So they go to my auction house and say, hey, do you have a copy of that contract that you have? Because we own that house and we're selling it.
Yeah.
We can't afford it anymore. And it was lucky for everyone but us.
Right.
And so I said, why don't you put it in my auction? He said, you could put a house in it. I go, yeah. It's the luckiest house in the world. Not OJ. Fucking Elvis owned it, right? OJ didn't own it. So they go, well, we're in foreclosure. Yeah. I said, I'll give you $3,000. If it doesn't get you $300,000, keep my $3,000 as a gift. Yeah. And they go, all right. So what happens is they have a real estate agent friend, and they saw the contract that I get a 20% buyer's fee. Oh, this fucker's making 20%. I only get 3%, blah, blah, blah. I go, but I'm guaranteeing you $300,000. You can't get $250,000. So they go back and forth. They go, you know, we got to be out of here in 2 months.
Right.
And you want 3 months for the auction? We can't do it, blah, blah, blah. And they finally backed out. Mm-hmm. Next thing you know, I see all over the news, every idea I had. House for sale in an auction.
What?
I told them, look, we can do it in 2 months on eBay. He goes, you can put houses on eBay? He goes, we're not going to do it, though. We're gonna hold off. So it's like a couple of days later, OJ's luckiest house in the world on sale on eBay. You know, starting bid, you know, $200,000.
Again, Elvis, right?
Elvis. I don't know why he keeps saying. All right, I'm losing my mind.
Jesus fucking hockey, bro.
So Elvis is lucky out of the world on sale on eBay. They stole my idea.
Yeah.
Careful, guys. So long story short, they ended up selling it for $900,000+, but they reneged on it because one of the bids came too late. There was a bid of $1,101,000 or something by a guy named Yuri Geller from England, some magician or something. So they ended up giving the guy, they reneged on that deal, gave that guy $10,000 that wanted, and ended up taking the one part. Long story short, they became a millionaire too. I called the guy up. The guy said, I said, you know what? You can at least thank. He goes, thanks, Tom. I appreciate it. I wanted to work with you, but it wasn't me, blah, blah, blah. Story. But the thing is, I wrote the story.
Yeah.
I told him the story about that, and the lady, was me, my ghostwriter,
yeah,
fucked up the story. It didn't make any sense, everything about it. And I told the publisher, I said, this book's going to suck.
Yeah.
I said, why don't you write it? I'll give you a few extra bucks, you write it. So I spent every night from 10 o'clock at night till 10 in the morning writing a chapter a night.
Right.
It took me like 25 days to write this book. And I did it, and I was proud of it. And then they had these editors. The publisher's girlfriend, this little lady from England, Henrietta's beautiful lady, but she's like, you know, what you said here on page 52, is that a joke? You talked about a memorabilia dealer who was a stripper and a drug. Is that a joke? I go, Yeah, you want me to write fucking LOL at the end of it? Obviously, it's true, but it's a you know, and you're like, they're like, gonna, is that a word? Gonna? I've heard of going to, but not go. And I like, dude. So she edited the thing, and she had me saying things like, I went to the store, thusly, I bought a dozen eggs. Yeah. I'm like, thusly? I never say thusly. What the fuck? And so I go to the editor, I go, this isn't me. And the editor goes, you know what? Henrietta was the lady's name. Henrietta, he's not Shakespeare, but I can understand his stories. I'm going to leave it the way it is. The lady got really mad because, you know, it isn't proper English that I speak, but people seem to like it, that read it. Problem is, they put me on this tour everywhere. I'd have to wake up 3 a.m. and go all these radio shows. And a lot of the radio hosts were very nice to me, but then they would take calls. Every time I took, okay, here we go. Yeah. People would call up, you're a fucking scumbag con artist. You belong in jail with OJ. I wouldn't wipe my ass with your book. I'm like, okay, next caller. Thank you. Why did you steal OJ's stuff? Actually, I didn't steal OJ's stuff. No one's accused me of stealing. Why should we believe you, you con artist scumbag? Okay, thank you very much. And you're never going to change nobody's minds with the facts. You know?
The facts are you didn't steal anything and you tried to call OJ. Now,
OJ was actually very nice to me. Yeah, people don't believe that he can be a charming, nice guy.
You hung out with him. And what did he tell you?
OJ would invite me to everything.
Did he do it, Tom? Did he kill?
I thought you were going to ask me, did he kidnap anybody?
No.
Believe it or not, a lot of people think that I was there when he cut off those people's head or whatever. I wasn't there.
You weren't there.
I was not there. I don't know nothing about that. You know, but I was there when they pulled out the guns and put it to my head and robbed everybody in the room. That I could tell you about. You know,
you'll have to come back a second time for that. We have like literally 5 minutes. It's always fun talking to you. I mean, like,
I was there the day of the robbery when we were watching TV and he decided not to do it in his room at the Palms, but he was going to do it at my room. He said, "Let's just do it at your room."
Yeah,
and I'm like, okay, everything was planned by him, right?
Yeah.
So we're watching TV, and this beautiful girl comes on the TV.
Yeah.
And he goes, that's my goddaughter. So I go, wow. She was stunning, this little brunette. Yeah. There was a show called The Tyra Banks Show with this model.
Yeah.
This model had a talk show. And it was terrible. She would say things like, today we are going to talk about people who are afraid of clowns. It was a terrible show. So anyway, she goes, today we have this girl who you might not know her, but her dad is one of the most famous lawyers in the world.
Yeah.
Says, yes, my dad was a member of the Dream Team for OJ, got OJ off the hook. And OJ, you got to be fucking kidding. Your dad was a scrub. He wasn't a great lawyer. He was a friend of mine who turned on me and screaming at the TV.
Yeah.
So he goes, well, for everyone that's not at home, your dad was Robert Kardashian and got OJ off the hook. And OJ screaming at the TV, that's bullshit, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, whoa, I'm going to watch this. So he says, well, we got some breaking news. Yes, we have a new show coming out called Keeping Up with the Kardashians. It's about my life and the life of our family. They're going to follow us around. It's called Keeping Up with the Kardashians. And OJ goes, Keeping Up with the Kardashians? That shit ain't gonna last 2 weeks. First time I ever heard of Cleveland the Kardashians.
Yeah, yeah.
But that was the day of the robbery.
Yeah.
That was the day of the robbery in his room. I don't know. That's the first time I ever heard
of it. Do you think I did it? What did he tell you? What did OJ tell you?
Well, at a show, he was always very nice to me.
Listen to this, guys.
For every reason, he liked me. I don't know. And he was always inviting me to things. He was always saying good. And he was very nice to me. My daughter worked for the Long Beach Press Telegram, gave her an exclusive interview. She was a teenage reporter. He was very, very nice to me. So a lot of people wanted to know, hey, tell me something terrible about OJ. I couldn't say. He was just extremely nice. So he's signing things for free after a show for me. His agent's mad.
Yeah.
He says, Tom, buy me a case of beer. Let's watch the USC game. And he's telling me jokes and everything. And in the middle of this, cracking, telling me dirty jokes, really funny and everything else.
Listen to this.
In the middle of this,
what does he say?
He goes, so Tom, you think I did it? Like, we're not even talking about that. And I'm like, what? And he goes, you think I did it? And I go, I'm caught off guard. And I'm like, well, OJ, you were found innocent. He He goes, "That's right, that's right." And then he goes, "You hear the one about the rabbi and the?" He goes right back to telling jokes or whatever. You know, and that was it. That's the only time we ever really talked about the murder.
Guys, that is almost my show. What do you think about Trump or Kamala Harris?
You know, when I was younger, I was a Democrat. Mm-hmm. When I got older, especially after getting my bills from taxes every... I love California, but all the taxes there, I became more of a Republican. Uh-huh. But from everything I see, like Trump, and I'm not going to say he's a brilliant guy. He's filed bankruptcy many times, but he figured it out. Let somebody else foot the bill in case he goes bankrupt. But a lot of his policies are so much better than with the Democrats. Yeah. I like why you had the balls to go to China and say, "Hey, if you're importing shit, for every dollar, it's going to cost you a dollar in tax." Yeah. No other president ever did. There's a lot of things I like about Trump. He went over there and he stole the jobs back by giving free, like no taxes to the corporate. The headline was Trump gives corporations no taxes, but what he did was he got 20,000 jobs back. So a lot of the things about Trump, but he's a dick.
But you like
Trump,
Kamala, don't you?
Kamala, I like as a person better than Trump. But the few times she was stupid enough to give an interview, her answers are like, "Oh, it makes you cringe." She doesn't seem bright enough to be just like when Biden was losing it the last couple of years. I don't think Kamala ever was bright enough to be president. I like her as a person. She's like a very likable. I saw the speech that her husband gave. Very charming guy. I just like Obama. I liked Obama.
He's
Obama's
a Jewish guy.
Obama's
great. She should have gone with
Shapiro.
With Shapiro.
Right there. Shapiro. I agree. Should have gone with Shapiro.
That's my show. Tune in every Wednesday night. My friend Thomas, Riccio, buy Busted. Buy this little deck of cards, guys. It's really cool. And, you know, Tom, we're going to have you come back for part two. Also, his house, believe it or not, is where they caught the Night Stalker. Right in front of his house, Richard Ramirez.
I wasn't there at the time, so I can't really give you play-by-play on that.
Next week, I'm going to have Detective Gil Carrillo.
You know, I got letters from jail from the Night Stalker, and he wrote, "This is not the Night Stalker."
All right, guys, thank you. Once again, Jim Francis, maybe that's my show.
Okay.
You're listening to Almost Famous with Jim Francis Meza, only on LA Talk Radio.